One.
Two.
Three. I almost said two. How bad am I at this?
It would have been terrible. It would have thrown the whole thing off.
Wouldn't be the first time.
I called an audible. I got more podcasting experience than you guys, so.
Yeah, you do.
I called an audible. I'm doing two from now on.
You're the old man of the community.
I don't know about that. I don't know. I might be on the longest running unretired podcast at this point. No, I feel like Monday Night Magic is probably still going. They're on like episode 930 or whatever. I feel like Chewy's been podcasting longer than I've been playing Magic, probably.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
He's been podcasting before they invented the iPod.
Before the term podcast existed.
I was just shouting into my Walkman in those days.
I ran out of AOL hours and I had to go get another CD. Hey, you guys don't mind if, if one of you, no, I'm not saying who, but if like somebody who was a guest on this episode was drunk, that wouldn't be an issue probably, right? I'm not going to point fingers, but like maybe somebody had a comedy show tonight and they got a little bit, I'm just saying, like that's probably cool, right? As long as they don't say the F word or anything untoward. Don't directly start calling people out in the community like this.
Well, through the magic of editing, fortunately, this is not one of our live broadcasts.
Good. You got me on 7-second delay because you knew who your guest was. That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like Andrew Dice Clay. He's like, no, we are not doing live. Turns out.
Yeah, I don't... Nate, when was the last time you recorded sober?
Oh, I've been sober for 3 months.
Like, real sober?
Yeah.
If he knows how long he's been sober, it's probably legit.
Wow.
He's checking the chip in his pocket, and he's like, oh, 3 months. I couldn't do it, man. Comedy, like, you either, like, get paid in alcohol, or, like, you just don't get paid that night sometimes. It's like, is we get any money? No. You can have two free drinks. Yeah. This comedy thing's working out.
Do you ever hope some of the comedians on the shows you host are teetotalers so you can get their drink tickets?
That has been a thing, but they're not teetotalers. They're recovering alcoholics. Nobody who does comedy is like, oh, I don't care for this. It's like, nope, last time I did this, I cheated on my wife with a man, so. I mean, if it's Vegas, if I'm doing any roast jokes, it's probably I'm roasting magic pros. That would be fun.
Speaking of burning bridges.
Got some great jokes about Dave Williams. Today was a good day. Didn't even get caught for shuffling my AKs. No? Nothing?
Oh. Oh.
Nobody? Tough room. No. I'm in rare form. This is going to be a good episode.
Yeah, I was shutting up just so you can keep starting new bits there. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And we are Commanderin. Thanks for listening, everybody. We put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about three banned topics. Religion, politics, Hearthstone, and let's not forget that hip-hop is restricted. Our guest this episode, Nate, will have to hold back his natural hip-hop tendencies.
Okay.
Wiki, 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 wiki.
We'd be grateful if you supported the show. It's the only way we can do this and bring you wonderful extras like our contests and special guests. Head over to patreon.com/commanderandmtg and donate to us. Patreon allows you to give back to the creators you appreciate. If you donate a buck a show, it helps immensely, even easier than ever before with our new buck a show donation tier. And if you donate $10 per show, you get access to all of the hosts in our exclusive Facebook chat group. Patroni there also get to contribute to show plans like this one, and they get sneak peeks and sometimes even exclusive content. I'm going to have to type rapidly while Jason talks a little bit later, Nate, because we did a 5 minutes of madness.
Mm.
That's right. That email address again, patreon.com/brainstormbrewery. All right. Thank you very much for contributing. $1 a show. That's would be appreciated.
Yep. Yep.
We're making way less than Magic Mike's, which was not surprising, but... We're not surprised. We're sort of like, hey, that's the thing. We noticed. We noticed the Brainstorm Brewery Patreon not doing as well as Magic Mike's. That's weird.
How about that?
That's probably legit. I haven't compared your Patreon to our Patreon because, like, I don't want to do that to either one of us. That would make an awkward... Because if you were making more, I'd be real passive aggressive. But if we were making more, I would bring it up a lot.
Yeah.
So, like, either way, it's going to ruin the flow of the show. So I haven't compared apples to oranges yet.
Yeah, it would get pretty uncomfortable either way.
We are not an EDH podcast per se, but it's going that way, sort of. The more all I care about finance-wise is EDH stuff. I don't know if you guys care about finance, you EDH listeners, but oh man, EDH finance is easy mode. You're like, you notice a card's good, and then you know that in 3 months it'll go up and not before. So you just have all the time in the world. You know how many copies of Curtain's Call I got just at the slowest pace possible? I'm like, hey, this is 50 cents. That's probably wrong. And then 3 months later, everyone's like, oh God, this is a $5 card. Whoops. I had literal months to pick those up. So that's why I love EDH Finance. It moves at the speed of everyone being like, yeah, I built my deck on Cockatrice and played it for a couple months. Then I finally got around to buying the cards when my Meemaw bought me the Commander deck for Christmas. And then I was like, you know what? I'll play with proxies for 2 months and then I'll buy the cards. Meanwhile, Standard's like, oh, the PT was this weekend. Friday at noon, a card was on camera, and at Friday at 2, it was sold out on TCG Player. That's why I don't care about Standard anymore. EDH Finance is the best. You guys are the best community. Thank you for making me a thing. I was like a mediocre financier, and then now I'm like King EDH. This is the best, but you guys have given me the best life possible.
Hey, would you do us a favor and take a picture of those either stacks of Benjamins or stacks of common cards from the Ravnica block so we can have a picture of the true MTG Finance life?
Oh, my basement. My wife doesn't even come down here because she gets sad every time she comes in the basement. Just sees stacks of cards and just like... I have stacks of empty 5Ks to the ceiling. Like, it's just, she just comes down here, she's like, ah, there's a root that, like, a whole floor of our house that's just uninhabitable. I'm like, don't touch that. It's inventory. I call it inventory so she doesn't get mad at me. It's not my personal collection, that's inventory. I'm going to sell it someday. So, yeah, she doesn't even come down here anymore. It's good.
Does she ever come down and turn around a stack of cards and just scream, not recognizing you?
No, and she doesn't really, I don't know. She knows how to play Magic. She knows how to play Mono Green Omnath, and I guess that's like the bare minimum. Like, I bet Terry Schiavo would be pretty good at Mono Green Omnath. What am I supposed to do? Put mana in your mana pool. What do I do with it? Nothing. You don't do anything with the mana in your mana pool. You just count it. You just count it up, and then you're like, is that 21 or more? I don't know. Yeah, so she can do that. She knows 100 Magic cards really well. And like, 40 of them are basic forests, so whatever.
All right.
This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. Speaking of your wife, it's Valentine's Day. So what better topic to discuss than MTG Finance, right? Especially given that we're living in a post-apocalyptic hell because of everything that happened in 2016.
I thought we weren't going to talk about politics.
Yeah.
You can't. You can't talk about politics. You can't even say that 2017's the worst. Everyone thought 2016 was bad. Like, Prince died. How could it get worse than this? Oh, right. A dictator. So, we're not going to talk about politics, but we might acknowledge it.
Yep.
There's some politics.
Hey, things are
over
weird,
there.
Huh?
I wrote that you have to wear a tie when you commute to work now.
I commute to work. I don't know if you know about my life, but I don't go anywhere.
That's what I mean. from the bedroom into the living room.
Oh, when a tie is a stay-at-home, she would puke on it, like, immediately. She doesn't puke normally, but if she sees me wearing a tie, she's like, I think I have to, I'm obligated to mess that up, right? Like every 80s Mr. Mom type movie where the dad was like, oh, I'm going to hold my daughter, and then the kid puked on the tie. So I got a feeling if I did wear a tie, she would see that as an opportunity to ruin my day.
Yeah, first she'd chew on it.
I telecommute in pajamas, and that's my life. If you're jelly, sorry. Be better at your hobbies, I guess. I don't know what to tell people.
Yeah, but on the downside, you spend your night getting drunk at comedy shows.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I mean, you have to be around all those comedians.
Yeah, I hate doing what I want to do 24/7. It's hell.
Jason Ault.
Oh, you guys haven't introduced me yet. That's weird. I think that the first time you said my name, everyone's like, this guy's a little familiar with the cast members. Yeah. You should call him Mr. DeLuca, Mr. Guest.
Yeah, people right now, they're shutting off their...
Oh, yeah, yeah. If anyone's still listening, I'm really surprised.
Believe me, we're really surprised every week. So we haven't had you on since June 2016. This is like your, what, not counting that each appearance prior has been a double episode. This is like your fourth appearance on the show.
I think so. I like coming back here. You know that I will come back here anytime I'm asked.
Yeah. Well, we were saving you for Valentine's Day because we know you're filled with love.
Because you know I put out. That's good.
So we've added a few listeners since you were last on. Now, those people might not, believe it or not, might not know who you are. Can you tell them who you are and why we know so much about you?
Okay. Here's what I like. I like EDH now. For a while, wasn't on board. And I started out in finance. I wrote for Quiet Speculation. Man, what year was that? That must have been like 2013 or something. Something crazy. I wrote for QuietSpeculation.com running finance articles. And the more I got into finance, the more I realized that EDH is the reason that more than 100 cards are expensive. Right? When you think about it, standard makes like 20 cards expensive for like 3 months at a time. Modern, yeah. Legacy, are people playing Legacy? I don't think people play Legacy anymore. I'd love it if they did. That's my favorite format. Vintage, forget about it. Vintage makes, like, Japanese foil Vandal Blast expensive, and that's it. And, like, Power, which was going to be expensive regardless. So, the most finance-relevant format is EDH, I think.
Really?
Anyway, so, yeah, I think so. It's making a ton of cards expensive. It's a bulk rare format, but every once in a while it'll take a bulk rare and just make it $5. Squandered Resources was a bulk rare. Mm. And then everyone's like, hey, there's this card called the Gitrog Monster. And everyone's like, yeah, you're right. This is a $5 card now. It just does that. It has the power to do that. And when a new card gets printed, that new card might not be worth anything for like a long time, but it'll make everything that goes in the deck. Like Nekusar is still like a dollar, but Nekusar made cards like Forced Fruition go from a quarter to like $7 just because of how good it is. So if you understand what happens in EDH, you understand what happens in finance. So,
but has that always been the case? Because I think you've said that we never moved the needle.
Not on new cards, not necessarily. It takes a while. Like, you're going to make Curtain's Call go up, but like if standard people hadn't been playing Panharmonicon, that would be like a $2 card right now. EDH is not going to give you enough demand up front to make those prices move until we have some time for those copies to get soaked up.
So it's the older out-of-print cards.
Yeah. EDH moves real slowly, you know? You got a long time. I mean, look at Primal Vigor. Everyone's like, oh, that's $20? Oh, that's not surprising. But I was saying, hey, people pick up Primal Vigor, like, literally when they were $4. Like, literally years ago. I was like, hey, Primal Vigor will eventually be real money. Pick those up. And I had so much time. You know how many Primal Vigors I've gotten just in trades? I haven't paid cash for a single Primal Vigor. All the ones I have, I've got in trade over the last couple years just because it moves so slowly. So, oh man, what year was it? I want to say it was 2014 or 15, like real early in the year. Adam Staborski on Gathering Magic said, hey, nobody's reading your Who to Follow column. And I said, that's not surprising. I don't like to write it. And he said, I don't want to fire you, but your column is not being read by people and we can't continue to pay you. And I was like, that's super fair. So he said, we've been talking about this concept you have called 75% EDH, where you couldn't make a Shroom deck that you liked. Because what I like to do was have a deck that, like, isn't going to completely spank new players, but, like, isn't just completely a dirtle deck. So you hit that sweet spot where if you play tight and get a little lucky, you can beat even a Toon deck, but you're not just going to, like, completely ruin the day of somebody with a casual deck. Like, this guy wrote to me, he's like, hey, can you help with my Tauran deck? I play a lot of counter spells, and when I play it against my girlfriend, she cried. I was like, yeah, your deck is not tuned properly. I don't care what the people at the LGS said. Your girlfriend cried, so your deck's wrong. So I've been writing those articles for literal years. Yeah, it's been like 2 or 3 years I've been writing 75% stuff on Gathering Magic. And then I started writing an EDH Finance column on MTG Price, where I'd contributed some columns before. And then I went back to MTG Price 2 years ago, and I've been writing an EDH Finance column that I think, honestly, all your listeners would find real instructive, because it's not necessarily about, hey, here's how to buy cards and make money. It's like more, hey, this could go up, so maybe get these now while they're cheap. So I think even if people that don't think they're interested in finance, if you don't want to pay too much for a card, if you don't want to be the guy paying $5 for Squandered Resources 2 months after Gitrog Monster spoiled, because you're like, oh, that went up because of this. Oh, I need this now. If you want to pay a quarter for Squandered Resources instead of $5, maybe pay a little bit of attention to what the finance people are talking about. So I'm not saying read my column on MTG Price every week.
Is it behind the paywall?
It's free. It's not behind the paywall.
Ooh.
Mine is not. There are some very, very good articles behind the paywall on MTG Price. Mine is not among them. You can read my articles for free every week.
Well, if one wanted to get behind that paywall, what is the monthly cost?
I don't remember. I think it's something like $10. It's something like absurdly cheap. Maybe even under 10. It's real reasonable. And like, if you are reading finance articles and you can't make $10 a month, then you're like not doing it right. Because one spec hits and you can pay for the whole year. Yeah. So that's sort of my evolution. I started out hardcore finance. I didn't really care for EDH at all. If you listen to like real early Brainstorm Brewery, we used to make fun of EDH players. I got into the format myself as a player, and then I started to realize the value of it. So I wrote the 75% column, and then I started writing EDH Finance. And then today, I'm basically the go-to guy for EDH Finance questions. I'm the guy people tweet at, which I like because...
You're the guy people have on their shows.
I'm trying to save EDH players money. I'm trying to get you guys to think ahead of the stuff that's going to happen and be prepared for it. Like, if something doesn't get reprinted, it's going to go up. You know, we added $5-$10 to the cost of Phyrexian Altar just by virtue of it not being in Commander 2015. I said, hey, if we're doing an artifact deck, which it's looking like we might do, I think that's a good candidate. I actually thought it would be in the green-black deck, because I thought the green-black deck... I honestly just went through the wikis for each two-color combination. I was like, green-black, that's tokens and stuff, right? Probably Phyrexian Altar's in here, because it's $15. And if it's not, that could probably hit 20-25, and that's exactly what happened. So you just paying attention, you could save yourself a lot of money. And that's really what I'm... If I can give your listeners one piece of advice, if you're not interested in reading articles and staying abreast of it, if I can give you one piece of advice... This is something I've said on the Command Zone also. Just double your order. So if you're like, hey, Gitrog Monster's out, Squandered Resources is a card that goes... Instead of buying one, buy two. Because if the card doubles, you can sell it, and then your copy was free. If it triples, you make money. If the card is good enough for you to buy it to put it in the deck, chances are other people are going to want it too, right?
Yeah.
So your instincts as a player... are actually the best thing as a financier. So if you don't care and you just want to buy cards for cheap to play Magic, I would recommend doubling your order on stuff. It's not going to break the bank. You're not gambling on 100 copies. If you just buy one more copy than you need of stuff, you're going to find that if the price goes up, you either didn't pay more money for a second copy later, or you can sell it or trade it and basically... you got a free copy of a card for your deck. So if that's all you do, you're actually going to find you have a lot of success because, like I said, your instincts are pretty good when you're buying stuff to play with.
What if that second card ends up in another deck?
But then you didn't pay more for it later.
Should you have bought three, though, is what I'm asking.
Maybe. But, like, at that point, it's like, why not buy 20? So if you're not trying to think of scenarios where, oh, no, I wish I had three copies, you know what? Save yourself some money. Just double up your orders. Because if you're buying something, chances are you're not a lunatic. Chances are you're onto something, right? You're like, hey, Kaidel's pretty good. What about Umbral Mantle? Well, I bet you wish you'd bought two Umbral Mantles for 50 cents because now they're like $8. So that's something to think about. Your instincts are better than you think because you're motivated by this is a card I want to play with, and so is everybody else, and they're the ones making the prices go up by virtue of buying the cards to go in the deck.
So let's say you're not just buying an extra copy like we do, right? That's what I do now. I heard you on the Command Zone when you appeared back way back. It was 2014, I think. And so now I buy an extra copy every time I buy a card. But if you wanted to buy a card that you think is really good as kind of a spec, as an investment, how many cards should you buy before it's like worth it? How many copies of that?
There's no minimum, but I will say don't spend more than you can afford to lose. Like, you are gambling. It's gambling that's informed by how good you are at playing Magic, you know? Your instincts are usually pretty good, but you're still gambling, so I wouldn't spend more than I could afford to lose. But honestly, if you are super excited about a spec, the way I was about Curtain's Call, I read Curtain's Call, I'm like, this is not a 50-cent card. You know, it's too it's a double Go for the Throat. If people are going to play Go for the Throat for 2 mana, you will pay 2-3 mana for a double Go for the Throat. Like, why not? So when I'm that excited about a spec, I will sometimes spend a couple $100, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. Then you're a financier at that point. Like, if you're spending a couple $100, that's what you're doing. So if you're not trying to do that, I don't know. If it's like maybe $100 total, you know? If it's a $5 card, buy 20 of them. If it's a 50-cent card, buy like 170 or whatever you need to do to get not spend $100 plus shipping.
Right.
You're probably at a point in your life where you can wager $100 on your own, like, EDH playing acumen. You know? And if you're not willing to spend $100, then maybe don't gamble your money. Maybe just spend your money on the cards you're going to play with. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, no one's going to call you, you know, like a wuss for not wagering $100 buying way more copies than you need. And here's the other thing. If you're not trying to do finance hardcore, it's hard to get out all those copies. You know, that's why I recommend just buying two of whatever you need. Because it's what are you going to do with 100 Curtain's Calls? If you don't know about buy listing, you're not going to be able to trade 100 copies at your LGS. You're just going to be like, ah, my spec went up. Now what do I do? That's a completely different problem you're not equipped for if you're sort of casual with this. So, like,
yeah.
If you're going to be hardcore, but if you're not going to be hardcore, maybe like 100 copies is just like a different nightmare than like, oh, the card triple, now I got to pay more for it.
Do you always buy list your specs?
Not always. I have a retail out in the form of my TCG Player store and my eBay store. Mm-hmm. And I'm at the point where people will ask me for cards. So I'm filling orders for people and they will pay like 95% of TCG mid sometimes to get this stuff from me instead.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I mean, I could sell for TCG mid, so like, why not? So they'll pay like, yeah, I'll give you 80%, 90% of TCG mid for this stuff if you get it from me and I just track it down. So if you don't have outs like that, I mean, buy listing's fine. I buy list a lot of stuff. That's my primary source of income, I would say, for what I'm doing is buy
listing. You do that with collections, though,
yep.
Right?
Yeah. That's a good way to do it. You just pay for a collection and like you almost can't lose as long as you don't overpay on the collection. But buy listing takes a lot of time. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of sorting. And sometimes you make like $5 an hour and you're like, why did I do this?
Yeah, but sometimes you're watching a movie or you're taking care of an infant child.
Exactly. It's $5 an hour, you know, no taxes. you watch Netflix the whole time. So there are pros and cons. If that's not the life you're trying to live, then that's okay. But it's good for me. I like what I'm up to, and yeah, works out pretty well.
Yeah, some guy brought in his collection at work, and he's just like, here, take whatever you want from it. And, you know, if you feel up to it, throw me a couple of bucks. And just going through that collection, and it wasn't even a big collection. It's like, it was just a pain, just a pain. It took days between meetings to do this. I don't know how you guys do it and without going crazy. But then again, here we are.
We like it.
Yeah.
Because you don't pick every single card and tally every single card. You sort of flip through. You ask them what they think is the expensive stuff. And then you're sort of like, nah, you make an offer. And you make an offer where you can't possibly lose money on the collection. Right? Based on what they think is in there. Then you go treasure hunting. You go through and you're like, this guy wrote down the price of every single bulk rare he's got. TCG Mid, I want 45 cents on this, blah, blah, blah. And then he's got foil dazes in his common bulk. You know? I love collections like that. The guy like made sure to write down that he's got a royal elemental and he wants a quarter for it, damn it. But then he's got like a foil cabal therapy in his bulk. It's treasure hunting. That's why we do it, because it's so much fun to pick through and be like, woo! You know? The guy that thought he picked all the bulk has got like $3 cards in his bulk. I love that. I would almost rather just buy the bulk and like not... But I don't know. You do fine on the rest of the stuff. You pay buy list, and if you out it for retail, you made money. And if you pay buy list and sell it for buy list, you didn't lose anything. So the bulk ends up being like the real meat of the collection. That's where you make your money. If you break even on the stuff they know they have, then you make money on the stuff they didn't know they had. That's why we like buying collections. It's so much fun to pick them and be like, oh, this guy didn't know that Gush was worth a quarter. Cool. He's got 20 of them in here. It's a good time.
Yeah. It's the modern day berry picking. Looking through a bush, finding the ripest berries.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. It's fun. We don't...
Yeah.
This isn't my retirement plan, but it's something to do while my wife makes actual money and I babysit, you know? I like
it. Your daughter is your retirement plan, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna live with her for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Believe me. Hey, so before we get into MTG Finance...
let's make sure we don't get into that right away.
Yeah, we would hate to just jump in and skip all this fun news. Did you know, Jason, that there's this website called edhrec.com and they're publishing articles on it?
What?
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. It's almost like it's the web's best tool for EDH deck building, and now all of a sudden it has additional entertainment, fun resources, and tips on building decks with the latest commanders, some of them with those partner mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who's writing articles? Nate Burgess.
Yeah, I think you knew.
Wow, I didn't. I was not aware. Congratulations, Nate.
All right.
Yeah, somebody very smart, undoubtedly charming, and without question, good looking, selected Nate to write articles for the site.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, You're referring to Don from EDH Rec, clearly. that was something I didn't mention in my whole, hey, this is the path I took to being EDH guy. Don approached me kind of at the same time I was approaching him, and I was like, hey, you should do articles on EDHREC.com. And he's like, I don't know how! But luckily, I had basically done the exact same thing on brainstormbrewery.com, which Brainstorm Brewery is my MTG Finance podcast, which some of you have heard of and some of you haven't. So we actually hired some writers, including Andy Hull, who I'm sure you guys are all aware of.
Yep.
And so I had experience with hiring people, managing the writers, doing all that stuff, using WordPress to publish the articles. There's basically everything that's going on edhrec.com. I had done essentially a dry run on brainstormbrewery.com, and it was pretty successful. We were getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of views like per week on that site. So it was a good time. That was in our heyday. Like we're not publishing much anymore. It's mostly just podcasts on brainstormbrewery.com. But I sort of had the expertise to be like, yeah, I can handle this. So basically Donald hired me to take care of that. And it's been really successful. We're doing one or two articles a weekday on EDHREC.com.
Yeah.
And sort of my mandate was, hey, let's make this stuff be a supplement to EDHREC. So if there's weaknesses in the data based on sort of what we can't scrape or the kind of person that will throw an article or a deck list up on Tapped Out, but, you know, maybe we'll miss some competitive stuff or just like everyone thinks I know how to build Atraxa, but, you know, you're missing some good stuff for like maybe a non Planeswalker build. The articles have been a really good supplement to sort of shore up some of the weaknesses of a data dump like EDHREC has. And it really enhances the data analytics of that site. So yeah. I'm really happy with how things turned out. I like Nate's series, obviously, or I would just fire him. Right? Like, I could do that. I could fire you right now. So man, the fact that I haven't means I like your article. So
cool.
You're using EDHREC to... I'm telling him about his article. Here's what you're doing. No, he's... What I like about what Nate's doing is he's using EDHREC to look at some of the cards that are in decks of related commanders, sort of. So he's like, he was doing... It was Ishai and Chrom this week?
Yeah.
And so he was looking at non-directly related commanders. He's like, well, what would a Numont deck have that could tell me about how to build this weird Jeskai deck? And I think that's a real good use of EDHREC. It plays to that site's strengths, and you can find some stuff that would go in an Ishai Chrom deck that you wouldn't necessarily find in the EDHREC searches for either of those commanders, but you can find it in a Numont deck or a Karavak deck or something like that. So
yeah,
I think that's a real clever use of the website, and I think it really enhances the site, basically, you know?
And Nate, you were building decks that way even before you were writing articles for it, right?
Oh, yeah. This series is kind of for the noobs on how to build a deck using all the search tools that you have available.
Yeah, because I've considered building an Ishai deck and, of course, a Vile Smasher deck, right? And I've used your article as inspiration.
All right.
Yeah,
I don't
good.
Know if you guys are aware of who spoiled Ishai, but I will tell you it was definitely me on Gathering Magic. I've gotten to spoil two cards. I got to spoil... Oh, what was the other one? The Jeskai dude who gives stuff double strike from...
Shuyun?
Yeah. That guy. The Silent Tempest. Yeah, I got to spoil him, and I sort of was like, what if we did a Dragonstyle Twins deck with him? And I got to spoil Isha, and I was sort of like, hey, what if Mana Gorger Hydra flew? Wouldn't that be cool? So, yeah, Isha
it
has
is really
a special
cool.
place in my heart, because I don't get to... Oh, it's by the way, if you spoil a card, you're previewing it. And if somebody
yes.
else previews a card, they spoiled it.
Yes.
So I previewed the card.
Yes, you previewed the card. And just as we previewed Kaedalia.
Yeah, that is my favorite card in Commander 2016.
Yeah.
For sure. I built the deck, and I hate it. Because they put Paradox Engine, I was like, oh good, I just win with Laboratory Maniac 100% of the time. This deck sucks. It's so good. It's just like, whoops, I win.
Yeah, Paradox Engine, man. How about it?
I think that could... Oh man, I don't know. Because when people were calling for its banning, I'm like, that's not bannable, you idiots. And then like the more I play with it, the more I'm like,
no.
It's in my deck and I want to ban it.
It's a really powerful card.
Hey, what if I used Guiltleaf Arc Druids to steal every land on the table? Wouldn't that be fun?
Maybe.
In some ways, it's like way, way worse than Prophet of Kruphix, and it's ridiculous to even compare the two. And in some ways, it's way better. It's just so much better than Prophet of Kruphix. And it's ridiculous to compare the two. Like, Prophet of Kruphix is sort of like, you get a little bit of a better turn every turn. You get to take every turn, and you're a little better. And Paradox Engine's sort of like, well, game's over. Do they have a naturalize? They don't. Well, okay. Make everybody watch you spend 20 minutes capsizing all of their permanents.
We had the lead developer, Ben Hayes, on to talk about Aether Revolt, and we did that as a watch list card because it's like, what happened here?
I don't think they necessarily 100% understand the implications for EDH of some of the stuff that they're trying to tune for standard. Nor should they.
Right.
Maybe Panharmonicon should have been Mythic? But, like, that wouldn't have... what does that do? It just makes it a little bit more expensive on the secondary market. It doesn't really change anything. Panharmonicon is practically useless and limited, so why make it Mythic?
Yeah.
You know? That's going to be feel bad if you crack that in your pack in limited, so maybe it's fine the way it is?
I don't know. If you're already deep into Fabricate, that doesn't hurt.
No, certainly not.
And if you now have Winding Constrictor, it's even better.
Winding Constrictor makes everything better. It took me an embarrassingly long time to realize you could get extra Marin experience counters with Winding Constrictor. I was like, why is this in so many Marin decks? I was just on chilling on EDH track looking at Winding Constrictor. I'm like, oh, that's why it's in Marin decks. I'm so good at my job. Because I thought what everybody else thought was like, oh, you get more poison counters? This card sucks. Well, I never thought it sucked, but you know what I mean. It's like, yeah. It's got a drawback. It gives you more counters. Why would you ever want more counters?
Yeah, in a set that generates energy counters. Well, Nate, what's the next article? You got Ishai up.
He did one before, right?
Next one is Tana the Bloodsower. So I'm going through all the enemy color... No, all the allied killer pairs first. And then...
Got it. And Jason, you have an army of elves that are helping to put these things out, right? These articles out?
No, it's me and Henry Stukenborg.
Patron Henry Stukenborg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
we really enjoy the close connections we have with EDHREC.com. And for what it's worth, we really do appreciate that you let us post the new episodes up there.
It's the least we could do.
Aww.
I told you a very long time ago, pretty much last time I was on the cast, that, hey, I got a secret project that I can't really talk about publicly, but I'd like to have you involved. So this is the payoff.
Yay.
Ta-da.
Nate is writing an article right now.
Is that why he's so quiet?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's about to tell us where Sean is. Because you remember last time you were on the cast, actually, we had this other guy with a British accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a poor choice. he's not here to defend himself. I'm going to say what I want.
Absolutely. And, well, he's been busy recently, and Nate is the one who's been keeping the closest tabs on him. So, Nate, what is Sean up to?
Oh, recently he has moved to Liverpool in order to stalk Ringo Starr.
Yeah.
Does Ringo Starr still live in Liverpool? I feel like if you have Beatles money, you don't have to live there.
Yeah, but he likes it there. He's like down to his roots and stuff.
Everyone here's got a weird accent and it smells like fish all the time. You sure you don't want to move east?
No, I like it here.
That's your Ringo Starr.
Was that Amish?
It's Reza Barton because we're all into Beatles, eh? Oh, it was good. I don't know. It sounded a little less ridiculous than Ringo Starr does, I guess.
Excellent.
Well, I have noticed, I mean, Ringo Starr is one of the most photographed people on the planet. And so over the last 24 hours, I have noticed that there's a frowning and scowling man in every photograph of Ringo Starr. Looks like Sean has been successful.
Got him.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we know since stalking requires that you get up kind of early, he's going to be up in about 45 minutes or so and making new photo bombs of himself in Ringo Starr photos. So we'll check in then. Something else that came out, it was on the 12th of January, so we're a little bit late, but we wanted to take the time to understand it. The CEO article, as it's known, Making Moves, right? Written by Chris Cox and published by Wizards of the Coast on the mothership. They talk about they have a new digital strategy for Magic the Gathering. And the gist of it, and I know most folks listening probably have missed the article, but we, all three of us, paid rapt attention when it came out. The gist is, it sounds like they're not happy with Magic the Gathering Online. And that they're going to try to strengthen other brands like D&D by including Magic in it. And also finding ways to put magic in other brands and products, like they mentioned MMOs, with playing a planeswalker in an MMO. So you guys have anything to say to that, other than to wish them the best of luck?
They can't possibly ruin Magic the Gathering if they do that, right? Like, they can... there's a thing called brand dilution.
Right.
But, like, they can't ruin the core of what Magic is, right, which is a trading card game that people will still play. Like,
right,
it's so big. More people play Magic than played WoW at WoW's peak. This game is it's a behemoth. So... I don't even think they're worried about brand dilution. They're like, let's just throw a handful of Magic the Gathering dust on all our other properties and see if it perks anything up. More power to... Good, give us more crap. We'll, as much as people are like, this is stupid. Yeah, you'll go buy a Chandra Funko Pop figure that glows in the dark and is only available at, you know, Hot Topic. Don't pretend
you won't. Is
that
where
you
get the glow-in-the-dark one?
I don't... Yeah, probably. So... Don't even pretend that, like, getting some magic flavor on something else that you already like isn't going to make your day. So they can't lose doing this.
Well, the brand people can't be happy about that. They you know, listening to Mark Rosewater, it's almost like they've been waging war to prevent that from happening. And then Chris Cox comes in and is like, nope, you're doing it.
Lego Planeswalkers.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Fine,
ooh, a Lego Jace.
I don't think anything they do can ruin the card game. So as long as the card game's intact, everything else that kind of happens is sort of like, oh, we made a board game nobody liked. Who cares? They already made a board game nobody likes, and it didn't ruin Magic. Nobody bought fewer Aether Revolt packs because they didn't like the stupid board game. You know?
It's true.
So, whatever. It's I think more power to them. Make the stupid Magic movie, why don't you?
You don't think that could harm the brand?
Did people stop playing D&D because of that Thor Birch piece of crap? Remember that movie? I went and saw that in the theater. The D&D movie with Jeremy Irons. I'm going to control all the dragons with my dragon wands. Yeah, it was the worst.
Jason, do you know that I have been playing D&D for longer than most of our listeners have been alive?
Yeah,
and
I
did not
you.
See any of the D&D movies.
You wait, they made more than one?
There were two.
Oh, man. Okay, I got to go see this second movie, if only for the comedic value.
Pretty much.
You know what? That didn't ruin D&D, though. All the D&D players went and saw that movie like, I wish that had been better, huh? But like, they didn't. No one went home and burned their PHB, you know? So I don't know. Good. Let them realize that magic matters. And... as soon as they got a, hey, Magic can save our other brands sort of attitude, maybe they'll fix what Magic needs fixed. Maybe when Magic's like, hey, why don't we have a digital product that doesn't get spanked by Hearthstone, maybe they'll listen.
Has that ship sailed?
No. They could just put out a good product and then everyone will go, oh, we're on board. That's all it would take. Honestly, people are so starving for a good Magic digital product.
Why has it taken this long? Like, how many years?
They pay far below market value for programmers.
Yeah. Oh, I know that.
And that's I think that has to be 100% of the answer, right?
Yeah, and I think that's changing because I know one of the guys they hired, and he does not work inexpensively. Like, they installed two new people in their digital products division, one person to hold the vision and another person to, like, work on extensions or something like that. And they are not inexpensive people. So maybe that's turning around.
I mean, once Hasbro starts breaking off Hasbro money, because everything was coming for like, oh, you're funded by the Wizards division or whatever. But like once Hasbro starts breaking off corporate money, I think they can turn it around. Because as much as everyone complains about Modo, if it were suddenly good, everyone would be on board in minutes. Yeah. They would trample each other to get back on board. So they just... We are such a forgiving and patient and tolerant community. As much as we complain, that's all we do. All we do is complain. We don't actually, like, one dude will be like, I sold $10,000 of stuff on Modo, and that is, like, noteworthy enough to write a bunch of articles about. Like, one lunatic does that, and everyone's like, oh, man. It's not people in droves quitting. I don't know. We're EDH people. We don't care about online. You could build an EDH deck for $2, and no one does. Who cares?
It's so painful with all the triggers.
It's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't, I don't know, you can't get drunk with your friends. That's why I play EDH, to get drunk with my friends.
What?
I mean...
You drink and play?
No beverages on the table.
But right next to the table, that's okay.
I have an IV set up with an ethanol drip. It's a social thing. So playing antiseptically on Moto with a bunch of strangers just doesn't. It's for some people, but it's not for me.
What if they added like emoticons, where you could salute people? Maybe flip them off.
Is there an emoticon that means better lucky than good? Because I would just click that until my mouse broke.
Yeah, they probably have an anti-spam. No, they wouldn't.
I'm salty. That's why I play games like Star Realms, so I can't talk any crap. It's like, you can't talk to your opponent at all. I'm like, perfect.
Yeah, actually, I haven't played Star Realms in a long time. I need to do that again. My wife plays it still.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And we played a couple of times. That was a lot of fun. It was a little bit painful to kind of get set up, but, you know, it works.
It's a, I don't know, there's a heavy luck component in Star Realms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're new, you're like, oh, it's about a 50-50 game. But when you really play, grind hundreds of hours and get really good, you can get that win percentage cranked up to 56%. So.
Yeah. It's largely, like, do you have enough to purchase the bomb card that's in the middle? And if you do, your opponent's going to have a hard time catching up again.
Yeah. I got a brain world. Would you like to concede?
No, I have a command ship, man.
I feel like I lose every time I get a command ship. Those of you who don't know what we're talking about, just bear with us. I feel like the games I get a command ship, I like find myself always losing. But if I get a brain world, I win all of those games. Command ship it's really good, but it's deceptive. It's like, you're all in on getting that, and then they just pull your pants down with a bunch of blob cards, and you just never... Your command ship is the last card in your deck. You shuffle up, and it's on the bottom. So it takes you four turns to draw it, and by that time, you're dead.
Yeah.
I like the blobs.
Blobs are... they're gruel, right? They're just like, damage!
Yeah, they are.
But occasionally, they have like the second best card draw in the game, I think.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite faction is the yellow faction that makes you discard a lot.
The control faction.
Yeah, well, no one takes those cards, first of all. Everyone's like, I want blob. And I was like, cool, I have three yellow cards. And then it's like, discard three. And they're like, oh, I guess I don't have an next turn, huh? Because I'll play two scouts and pass. Great.
Yeah, if you can survive the blob rush, that works out pretty well.
For those of you who don't know, Star Realms is a game designed by Darwin Castle and Rob Dougherty, both of whom are Magic Hall of Famers. And, they've designed a couple games together, one called Cthulhu Realms, which is sort of like... I think Darwin did that by himself, but it's sort of the same rules as Star Realms. And then there's Hero Realms they did together, which is... It's kind of like the same rule set, but like different skins, essentially.
And Star Realms was the first of the three, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then they did Epic.
Yeah.
So I really like what those two dudes are up to. When they put their heads together, they make really... First of all, intuitive games for Magic players to learn. Like, Rob Dougherty at Gen Con showed me how to play Star Realms, and I picked it up in, like, a couple minutes.
Yeah, it's so easy.
So if you're a Magic player, you already know how to play it, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's super off-topic, but whatever. It's a game that all of you listening would like.
Yes, it is. It's essentially drafting. It's not even essentially drafting. It's drafting. And if you've drafted Magic cards before, this is... second nature to you.
Imagine if you were like Rochester drafting, but you put the cards in your deck as you drafted them, and then you were playing a hand between every turn of drafting.
Mm-hmm. I kind of want to play right now.
Right? Yeah, I got the mobile app. I just spam that all day.
Yeah. So, listeners, we're going to play Star Realms, and since it's a two-player game, we're going to take turns, and we'll be right back. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Listeners, play Star Realms. We're going to move on to the actual main topic here. Jason, we've only been recording for what now? Let's see.
An
a little over an hour. But I do have to, leave in like 30 minutes or so. So we can't do a full 2-hour show like we always do.
Oh, well, that's disappointing. I mean, not for me. Yeah. It's disappointing for your listeners.
Yeah, it is. It is. They basically have written in and said that they tolerate the shows we do between your appearances.
I got to be honest. That was me who wrote all those emails.
From each of your different buy list bidding accounts, right?
I will not confirm or deny.
All right. So let's talk about some general trends that we've seen in the MTG Finance community.
Sure thing.
Like you were saying before, it looks like EDH players have had a significant impact, right?
You could say that.
Any real surprises in that? We're going to get into details about each of the sets, but
honestly, the surprises for me have been the EDH cards that standard players have been playing, like on the PT and stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't expect Paradox Engine and Panharmonicon and Aetherworks Marvel and cards like that to get played in standard. Like, I knew they were good, but I didn't expect anyone in standard to play a card like that. Yeah. Seasons Pass, are you kidding me? That's the slowest card ever. And they're like, yeah, Seasons, we'll play 10-mana cards in standard, whatever.
Is that seeing play now?
It was. That was back, like, during Pyromancer's Goggle days. Like,
yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't really expect EDH cards to get played in standard, and I was sort of pleasantly surprised when they did. But I was sort of like, I would like Paradox Engine to hit $3, but it never will now, so that's too bad. But yeah, those are the surprises for me. Like, Deep Glow Skate hitting $10 wasn't a surprise for me.
Right.
I guess Curtain's Call being as cheap as it was before it went up was sort of surprising. I really slept on that card. It wasn't until, like, I read it for the third or fourth time I was like, hang on. In most games, this is going to be a 2 or 3 mana spell, right? So it's a 2 or 3 mana double go for the throat? That seems... I heard someone call it a bad Ashes to Ashes. I'm like, it's a better go for the throat. Like, learn to evaluate cards better, I guess.
Well, it turns out you're correct, I think.
I would say so. There's no way me talking about it on a podcast a couple times made it go from 50 cents to $5 without everybody else saying, yeah, it's a real card.
No, it was that slow snap up of the cards when they were lower than $5.
I mean, that did happen, yeah, for sure. Because the new price is what people are selling them for in TCG Player, so.
What's the best long-term value in a set released in 2016?
Conspiracy 2? The problem is, there are, like, you can get a $20 booster box of Conspiracy 2. And by that $20, I mean you open it and there's $20 worth of cards in it. But I feel like there are so many really expensive cards. If you get basically any foil mythic, it's hard not to pay for the box. Like, foil Selvahl is like $70, and a box is like $70.
Yeah.
Foil Leovold.
That's a couple of $100, right?
Oh, foil Leovold's a couple hundred, yeah. You got Sanctum Prelate, and you got the Recruiter, and you got the steal all their stuff or take extra turns. Expropriate,
yeah.
Yeah, there's so many good EDH and Legacy cards in Conspiracy, and it's not that the set was bad, it was that the set was drafted for like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Because everyone's like, Conspiracy 2, and everyone's like, we're going to draft Conspiracy. And they're like, just kidding, here's Kaladesh. And everyone went, oh no! That's the same thing that happened the first time with Conspiracy. And Josh Lee Kwai bought all these boxes. He's like, I have all this Conspiracy. We're drafting it in Vegas. And I'm sure it's going to happen this time around. The boxes are like, my LGS pays like $75 for a box. And that's like what they are on eBay. I was like, hey, I'll sell these on eBay and give you the profit. Nope. I'll lose money. So he's like got a bunch of boxes and it just feels bad. I'm probably just going to buy them and bust them myself just because there's so much good stuff in these sets.
Oh,
so I would say if Conspiracy gets, if people start like wholesaling, because I know Cool Stuff was doing like $72 boxes around Christmas.
Yeah.
If anybody starts to be like, oh my god, I need to get out of these 65, you just snap them. There's so many good cards in the... And it's so much fun to draft.
Well, Leovold alone is going to pay for a $65 box.
Oh, yeah. You just get all your buddies together. And Leovold's a card they'll reprint, like, guaranteed.
Yeah.
It'll be a Judge foil, or they'll just, like, put it in some sort of supplementary product. Leovold's getting reprinted. But, man, that card's dumb. And it made all the stuff that Nekusar made spike again. You know how many... Yeah. If I can make money off of Teferi's puzzle box a third time, that'll make me laugh so much, because I'm like... buy list buying back copies that I sold to people for like $5. I'm paying like $2 to get back a card I sold to somebody else for $5 earlier, and then I sell them to them for $5 again. Oh, I love it.
Well, it's dropping again.
Yeah.
So you'll be picking up Teferi's puzzle box?
Oh, for sure. That card's so good.
Yeah.
So I like, out of everything that came out in 2016, I like Conspiracy, Take the Crown the best. Legacy's going to want the stuff that makes you the Monarch. Like, people were playing that in Legacy tournaments. Stuff that makes you the Monarch, that land that does it, the Custody Lich I like, because it kills a dude. That kills Goyf in Legacy. I don't know if you guys know that. Killing Goyf is pretty important. Kills True Name Nemesis, for God's sake. Yeah, I like just about it. There's a Marchesa in there that people are building. Like, there's a lot of good stuff in that set. So out of everything that came out in 2016 that's not called Commander 2016, Conspiracy Take the Crown was a gift to EDH players that we didn't even get time to unwrap before they gave us, you know, Aether Revolt and Kaladesh. So
yeah, they overwhelmed it with Kaladesh.
There were too many releases this year. And they're doing the same thing next year. Because there's some people thinking they're not going to do Commander 2017 because they're doing Commander Anthology, and I think that's wrong. They're doing Commander 2017.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, those people are sniffing
so
glue.
It's so much. Like, the latter part of the year, they're like, here's 27 releases. There's one every 6 weeks.
Yeah, that was a pain. They're starting it early this year, too. It's starting in March, actually. I think from March through the entire time we know of the release schedule, we have something every month that costs about $70 or more.
Yeah, that's a good way to spend about $8-9 grand on Magic in a year.
Uh-huh. And it's not slowing Josh down either. Like, he still buys cases of this stuff.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful.
Because, he's got the stuff, and... if he wants to draft something, he's always got something to draft. And if he wants to bust something, he's always got something to bust. And
have you seen the in response videos that they do with the professor?
Yeah, yeah.
He stands in front of his wall of magic now. It's wonderful to see that.
Yeah, it's good looking, for sure.
Yeah. And his girlfriend pulls inventions from
every pack. God, yeah. I want to save all my packs to give to Josh's girlfriend. That's crazy. Yeah.
It's nuts. It's great following him on Twitter and seeing all of these inventions come out. And before that, of course, it was the lands, the expeditions.
Yeah.
Hmm. So what about Frontier? How is that affecting things?
I don't want to.
That's good enough. You could just leave it at that.
I don't think that Frontier is necessary yet. I think Frontier will be a format a couple years. I think Wizards will take it over. And maybe like 3-4 years, it'll be like, And it's not going to be called Frontier, first of all. So if you're got like magicfrontier.com or whatever, when Wizards makes it a real format, they won't call it Frontier. They'll call it something else, man. Gavin Verhey invented Modern it was called Overextended when he had it. And it's not called Overextended now. It's called Modern. So Frontier will have a different name for sure. And it'll happen in 3 or 4 years. But right now, I see all these people excited about Frontier. I'm like, yeah, this is Tiny Leaders 2.0. Remember Tiny Leaders?
Mm-hmm.
Morale's going to revolutionize. Oh, it's EDH for Legacy players. I don't know, man. I'm still not convinced on Frontier. Like, it'll be a format eventually, but I don't think you gain anything by being a super early adopter. And I think that fact that Wizards doesn't like the fact that there's Fetchlands in Frontier.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to start at a different spot. I think they'll either start Origins forward, or they'll just, like, go after Khan's block just to skirt the Fetchlands. They'll do something.
Yeah.
But, like, it won't happen. It's not going to be necessary for years. There are people that are bored with Standard because Standard was all looter scooters, and they wanted something to grab onto, and they got it in Frontier. But financially, what? Okay, good. Go pay $11 for a Siege Rhino. Good luck with that. I'm not.
Is Siege Rhino up that high again?
No, I'm not sold. Remember everyone was paying like ridiculous money for all these Tiny Leaders cards and like
for Sig River Cutthroat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was up to like $20 at one point.
I was like, hey, if Tiny Leader's a thing, you probably want Sunforger, and then that got reprinted, so I made a bunch of money selling them. But Tiny Leader's never really materialized. I think Frontier will materialize, but not because someone invented it, but just because like it was always going to materialize. Because yeah. Wizards always knew they needed something between Standard and Modern once Modern becomes what Legacy is now, which is just like stuff going all the way back to Mirrodin 5 years from now is going to seem pretty ridiculous. You know, it's going to... Somebody starting Magic in 5 years is not going to be able to afford Mirrodin block cards.
No, right.
So they will have to have something between Modern and Standard. And yeah. It'll probably look a lot like Frontier does now, but I think it's too early to even care about it.
So you think we'll never see fetch lands in a Standard set again?
I don't think they like it. They might.
Yeah, they don't.
They don't like it. They really don't.
What impact do you think the 2-block rotation going back to 2 years, like, what do you think that impact will be? Some of the Standard staples remain staples for longer?
Yeah, they're just trying to make Standard less miserable any way they can. Because Standard is their flagship format. If someone starts Magic that's never played Magic before, they want them to be a Standard player primarily, and then they'll find their other stuff. Standard is it's just the best place to start. It's the FNM format, you know?
Yeah.
It's the biggest PT format. They're like, Standards are, it's our bread and butter. So they're trying all kind of different stuff to make Standard good. And as much as people are complaining when the stuff they try isn't working, they're trying.
Yeah, they are.
They'll nail it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So if the two-year rotation format is what it takes, maybe that's what it takes. But financially, it'll just make the cards retain their value a little better. All the finance people know when to sell stuff and when to buy stuff. So, like, that changing isn't going to take us by surprise.
Right. Do you think that 18-month rotation actually had a negative impact on people playing Standard?
I think people playing Standard say that. I don't think that's necessarily true. I don't really know. But they didn't really give us enough time to even make that determination. We don't have enough data.
Then what prompted it?
I think the people that are most unhappy with Magic are the most vocal. And I think they're just trying to make them happy. And maybe they know something we don't, because definitely going from the 3-set block to the 2-set block really threw them for a loop. Like, a lot of these second sets are really dense with good cards. And you can tell it's because they had 3 sets worth of cards they're trying to jam into 2 sets. And I think that threw them for a loop, and they were still recovering from that when they had to be like, all right, what's the new rotation? So, I don't know, man. I really don't know what's the reason for the change and the change back is, but I think that what they're doing is coming from a place of trying to save the game. They're not trying to squeeze money out of people. They're trying to make the game playable.
Mm.
And they just want Standard format not to be miserable. Because if you nail Standard, nothing else has to be perfect. Because you're not trying to get everybody to play Modern. You're not trying to get everyone to play Legacy. But you are trying to get everybody to play Standard. So that's the one you got to nail. So they're trying to dial it in. Maybe they don't have enough data to know they should change it this soon, but that's not my job to say that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I take them at their word when they say that it was essentially too painful. It was happening too quickly, and the meta was changing too fast for most players to kind of grasp.
It felt bad. They were paying a lot of money for their deck, and then you could play your deck for, what, a couple months?
Yeah. In some cases, it was only 15 months, right?
Yeah, that didn't feel good to people.
Yeah. All right, so those are kind of the big finance trends, unless we missed something. And you would be the expert here on whether or not we missed something in terms of trends, like big movements in the community that are affecting prices.
I try not to care anymore. I try to only pay attention to the stuff I care about.
Is that like not reading the news if you're a stock trader?
Right. It's like, hey, who cares about China? I'm trying to trade on the New York Stock Exchange, not the Hang Seng. Who cares about China? No, it's yeah, you're absolutely right. I can't not care, but I don't want to care sometimes.
Well, here we are at the end of the first part of another two-part visit by Jason Ault. We love having Jason on and had a blast recording this, so we hope you'll tune in for the second part coming next week. Let us know what you think. As always, you can send us email at cast@commanderandmtg.com, or you can tweet at us at @commanderandmtg. We love to hear from you, so please take the time to write to us and let us know what you think of this episode. You can always come visit and donate to the show at patreon.com/commanderandmtg. We really appreciate that support. So come on over to patreon.com/commanderandmtg and donate a buck a show.
Commander.